from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
We welcome you into a brand new week. Welcome in. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We have a full two-hour program tonight, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. And then you get another hour of me with another a few other folks coming up at 8 o'clock, as well as a KMOX Sports Roundtable this evening, where Tom Ackerman, Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler, and myself talk through college football and the World Series and some other things as well, hockey, the Blues. So that's going to be coming up. So really, we have you covered until 9 o'clock with Sports Talk right here on KMOX. As always, if you want to join in on the program, multiple ways to get connected. You can call, you can text, same number, whether you're calling or texting, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. If you ever want to see the video version of this show, which is literally just me standing in front of a microphone talking, but if that's the thing that you want to see, you can see that via social media. You can also leave voice messages via the Odyssey app. Here's what's coming up on the program today. Danny Wexelman, one of our favorite people to talk baseball with, a St. Louisan who, of course, has made it big with ESPN and MLB Network Radio. From Yankee Stadium, she joins us in about 10 minutes or so. And then Patrick Dorcher will join us at 6:35, covers the NFL for NBC Sports. We'll look back at the weekend that was. We'll look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, look, we're going to spend some time today. I wish I should have invited Chris Ronge onto the program, because for those of you who don't know, Ronge, he loves his Chicago Bears, and what a terrible way for the Bears to lose on a Hail Mary from the Washington Commanders, where one of the Bears players was already celebrating and celebrating to the crowd with his back to the play as the Hail Mary was successfully executed. That was as Bears as it gets. So we're going to have some fun with that coming up later on in the program as well. From a hockey standpoint, Blues get back at it tomorrow. They continue their four-game road trip, where their first three games are being played in Canada. They have a win against Toronto, a loss against Montreal. They'll play the Senators tomorrow, and then they are going to wrap up this road trip when they take on the Philadelphia Flyers coming up on Thursday, and then they are finally going to get back home. Their next home game, it is scheduled for this Saturday, when Craig Berube and the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to be in St. Louis, and we'll see if the Blues can do what they did to Toronto this past Thursday when they won by a 5-1 score. This is the first time we have been able to talk since the World Series got underway. Dodgers take the first two games of the series, both in Los Angeles, and the series is now going to shift to New York for the next three. If, and it's a big if, because I still think the door is open for the Yankees to walk through. I still think the Yankees have a legitimate chance to win this World Series. But that being said, if they don't, and if they lose tonight, that's probably all she wrote, because then they're down 3-0. And with all due respect to the Yankees, I don't think they're winning four straight against the Dodgers. But if the Yankees win tonight, that sets them up to possibly win tomorrow in a bullpen game that the Dodgers are going to throw. And then all of a sudden, it's not crazy to think that it's going to be a 2-2 series. In fact, the Yankees are favored in tonight's game. I would assume they're going to be favored tomorrow. So the prognosticators would tell you that this series is likely to be 2-2 before eventually getting back to the respective tops of the rotation again. But just crazy that the Dodgers have to go with a bullpen game. This is the Dodgers with this huge payroll. And now, admittedly, they had lots of injuries this year, and many of those injuries impacted the starting rotation. But it's a World Series game. You have a ridiculous payroll, and you're stuck with a bullpen game in game number four. Just crazy that it's turned out that way. So we'll see what happens tonight. For me, the story of this postseason, not just this World Series, not just these two teams, for me, the story of this postseason has been the moments. And maybe I'm being a prisoner of said moment. because I do that sometimes. I think we all do. But I feel like the big moments in this year's postseason, there have been so many more of them. Just memorable plays that have happened. And we had another one of those on Friday night in Game 1 of the World Series, where if the Dodgers win this World Series, and more importantly, if the Yankees lose this World Series, I think the Yankees are going to be kicking themselves from Game 1 because they had the lead going to the bottom of the 10th inning. They even got Shohei Ohtani to pop out to get the second out, and up walks Freddie Freeman with one ankle, and the first pitch that he sees, admittedly, being thrown by a guy who hadn't pitched in a month, and Nestor Cortes. Freddie Freeman immediately deposits that thing into the outfield for a grand slam. And what an incredible moment that was. In many ways, I shifted. I was kind of rooting for the Yankees in the series. I don't really have a hard rooting interest in this series, but I kind of went from being pro Yankees to pro Dodgers just because that moment was amazing. That moment was amazing. And I want it to matter. And if the Yankees win this World Series, that grand slam from Freddie Freeman becomes a footnote. Yeah, there was this pretty cool grand slam that happened in the first game of the series. Dodgers went up 2-0 and the Yankees eventually came back and won it. But if the Dodgers win this, we're going to think back on the Freddie Freeman grand slam, not exactly the way we look at the Kirk Gibson home run, but somewhat similar. So because just from a standpoint of loving baseball and loving this year's postseason and loving all these big moments and wanting them to be, from a historical standpoint, as impactful as possible, in many ways, I am rooting for the Dodgers now to win this series just because of that Freddie Freeman grand slam. Now, if a Yankee does something even cooler, then maybe I'm going to switch it to the other side. We'll wait and see. All right, when we come back, we are going to be joined by our friend Danny Wexelman, covers Major League Baseball for ESPN and MLB Network Radio. She joins us in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We do roll on here on a Monday night. Welcome back in. Tonight it is game 3 of the World Series. Dodgers lead the Yankees 2-0, but the series is now shifting to New York, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to shift to New York and welcome on one of our absolute favorite people, period, and favorite people to talk baseball with. She is a St. Louisan, and she rules the world now on MLB Network Radio and ESPN. She is Danny Wexelman. Danny, it's always great to talk with you. How are you?
Oh, my God, Matt. I'm stoked to be here. I'm on the concourse right now. Got here early for the game, pregame on the field, and it's the best time of the year, so I so appreciate you having me.
Yeah, we're glad that you found some time for us. Set the scene. How are Yankees fans feeling right now with this team down 2-0, but the series shifting to New York?
I think they're nervous, if I'm being honest. I think that there's this air of, what if it doesn't get back to L.A.? What if we can't win a game at home? And I think you kind of saw that in the ticket prices. If anyone was paying attention to those, they started to go down, which is really interesting, right? Because they haven't had a World Series home game in 15 years. But I will tell you that the crowds have poured in early. They're loud. They're excited. Everyone's got their best Yankees gear on. I've seen way more Yankee fans than Dodger fans, as it should be. The tickets were really hard to come by. But I do think there's a little bit of nervousness, I would say, because the Dodgers have taken that commanding 2-0 lead.
I've seen the social media clips and some of the comments from columnists and so forth out of New York about Aaron Boone's bullpen strategy, especially in game 1. Is he able to tune that out? Obviously, you manage in New York, you're able to do that, but obviously a lot of people were not happy with Nestor Cortes being in that spot in game 1.
I think that if you asked Aaron Boone if he could have a mulligan, I would bet he would probably take it, right? And not even go to a different bullpen arm, but keep Luke Hoover. In that ball game, he could have done it, right? He's got to go up in game 1, and so I do think that he can manage it. I have no doubt in my mind. I've had a chance to get to know him a little bit and also cover him in the game, and I think that he is a really good manager, and he makes mistakes. And I do think that he recognizes that probably wasn't the right move, but, you know, this is the World Series, and sometimes you get outmanaged, and sometimes you make decisions that in the moment feel really good, and obviously in hindsight, that did not feel so good. But Aaron Boone is a consummate professional. This is a guy who's not listening to what anyone's saying or paying attention to anything that anybody is saying. He's very focused on his team and moving forward. And so I have the utmost confidence in him. I mean, listen, you have two of the best managers in the game. He and Dave Roberts have been exceptional. Dave has done a better job all throughout this postseason. He has earned his paycheck and then some this season, the injuries that they've sustained. But I have faith in Aaron Boone. I know a lot of people maybe don't always see it that way, but I think if you look at it from an objective perspective, what he's done all season long, game one with Sandy, like without that, I think he's done a hell of a job, but he needs to step up. The whole team has to step up. They are, to me, swimming upstream right now, trying to just win their first ball game. It feels insurmountable, but I like the rest of the moves that Boone has made.
Shohei Ohtani in the lineup, leading off. He's the DH for the Dodgers. Has any indication been given just how compromised that shoulder might be or what percent he's at, or are the Dodgers very much keeping that close to the vest?
Yeah, I actually talked to a source before the game. They were here working and just looking at the shoulder length at the ballpark. So I don't know the extent of what he's feeling or really what that partial dislocation means, but guys, it's the World Series, you know. So I think ultimately he must feel good enough, and they feel good enough, right? Because he's a $700 million man. Good enough for him to be in this game. Good news, he doesn't play the field or pitch, right? So he's just got to swing that back. It's the left shoulder, so it's that back shoulder, which obviously is important. I would expect him to be maybe more cautious on the bases, not stealing unless he absolutely has to, or obviously sliding unless the play calls for it. But I think that if he's in the lineup, then he's good to go. I ultimately don't think that you would see him in there if there was any concern about it getting worse, or that if that would be compromising to him in the future. So I feel like the indications for me that he's in the lineup mean that it really isn't as bad as maybe it looked or it seemed in the moment.
We're talking with Danny Wexelman from ESPN and MLB Network Radio. Going back to the bullpen usage for just a moment, do you think managers are looking around? Because it feels like to me in the playoffs, because of all the off days, we're seeing liberal usage of the bullpen because you're able to bring guys back more often, and maybe the effectiveness is not what you want it to be. Do you think one of these next steps in baseball is maybe reevaluating how you use pitching in the postseason, almost ignoring the fact that there's so many off days?
Oh, gosh, it's so tough, right? Because I think in this moment, you're doing the best with what you have. And unfortunately for the Dodgers, the bullpen game is necessary. It's ugly. Nobody wants it. Dave Roberts doesn't want it. The Dodgers don't want it. But they are doing the best with what they have. The problem is that, right, as you said, the starters can't go deep into games. You're taxing your bullpen. And so what does that mean? Well, that also means for the opposing team that they're seeing those arms a lot more. That's good news for them. Bad news for that staff that has to pitch over and over and over again because your starters can't figure it out. And listen, Jack Flaherty's done it, right? Former Cardinal, of course he has. Garrett Cole did it in game one. He was able to give them length. But other than that, I think you have to kind of succumb to the idea that you're at the end of the season. Everyone is tired. Your starters aren't going to be able to give you length. That's why you have eight bullpen arms to bridge that gap. For example, right, Jake Cousins for the Yankees, Brent Honeywell Jr. for the Dodgers, those are those guys who maybe can give you both innings like a starter and get you through whether you're up big or down big. But I don't know the solution. I hate it, Matt. I love old school baseball. I want to see these guys go seven. And it's unfortunate because you start to call it vintage, right? You're like, oh, it's a vintage performance. I'm like, that should just be the regular. That should be the norm. If you're going seven innings, right, that's what baseball deserves. But it is a problem, and I don't like it. And I don't think fans like it either. No one wants to see a bullpen guy come in the fourth inning. That's not good baseball. That's not good for the game. But unfortunately, especially in this postseason, that's been the key. And you're also, I'll add too, like, you see the high leverage guys, right? Your closers or your setup man coming in the fifth or sixth because that's the biggest moment. And it's kind of exciting. But then also you start to wonder who's going to close this game out if it's a close game. And I think that that taxes the managers and the decisions they make as well. But I don't have the solution, but I will say I don't love seeing it. But you got to get through the postseason. And sometimes it just is It's just jerry-rigged, right? It's next man up, spikes on, and you figure it out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. On the other side of it, and this has a lot to do with the Stars, that's not impacting TV ratings. They're up like 60% year over year. They're up 90% for the, you know, the younger demographic. If you're baseball, you look and you see it's a series that features Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, and you say the Stars are bringing out the TV ratings, but it's good for the health of the game when that many people are watching it.
Oh my gosh. It makes my heart so happy, Matt, to see those numbers go up. And it is because the Stars are playing, but also we've been spoiled in October. These have been some of the best postseason games I've ever seen watching this game. And that's not just me saying that, right? That is the generation above me and the generation above them saying that as well, because the talent is off the charts. And you have this expanded postseason now with 12 teams, and the Tigers get in and they're fun, and they ruin the Astros season, right? There's all these great narratives and storylines. And I think it's two reasons. Number one, the league is doing a better job of marketing everybody and marketing the storylines and making everyone accessible. That wasn't the case a decade ago. You could tell a story about every guy, maybe not about the Stars and maybe not about a guy like, I don't know, Tommy Edman, who has had a breakout October, right? And so everyone is accessible now. Everyone wants their story out there. And you also have the two presumptive MVPs, two guys that hit more than 50 home runs in the season going head-to-head. You have both coasts. This is, you could really look back and say, the last time we had a World Series in Spade was 1981 when these two teams played each other. And so I think that there's so many great things about what we're seeing, and people are loving the guys. It's all about the people on the field who now feel like your friend, right? Jazz Chisholm Jr., for example, very accessible, right? And everything that he does with his socials. I think that I know I'm kind of speaking to maybe a millennial generation or Gen Z, but I think that's why people have fallen back in love with the game and they've been watching, is because there's drama, there's moments, and you feel like you know who these guys are.
100%. And baseball at times struggles with showing out on the Stars, but we know who these people are, and everybody does, and it's certainly shown in the TV ratings. Dani Wexelman does an incredible job working with ESPN, MLB Network Radio. Follow her on Twitter, at Dani Wex, D-A-N-I-W-E-X. Dani, thanks for the time. I know it's a busy night for you. Really cool that you were able to spend a few moments with us.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I'm the lucky one, Matt, and thanks for having me. Enjoy the game.
Awesome. Very good. That's Dani Wexelman joining us here on the program. A native St. Louisan, and she's part of the team at ESPN and MLB Network Radio covering Major League Baseball, doing a fantastic job with it, and we're happy that we're able to get a few moments with her. All right, we are going to switch gears. We're going to talk some football coming up in just a moment or so. Look back at the weekend that was in the NFL. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you guys with us today. It was an entertaining weekend of NFL football. Always an entertaining weekend of NFL football. The Chiefs, they win again. They just keep winning. They are now 7-0. Some other interesting things happening as well. To look back at the weekend that was, very happy to welcome in somebody who covers and writes about the NFL for NBC Sports. He is Patrick Daugherty. He is on Twitter at RotoPat, R-O-T-O-P-A-T. Patrick, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Thanks for having me, and I'm really thankful you had me for the NFL segment and not the disappointing Mizzou segment. I am an anguished alum, and I knew the most dangerous thing in the world this year was having actual expectations for my Tigers.
Yeah, well, they're still in the top 25 somehow, some way, but that it's a bad look when you go into the season with college football playoff expectations and the losses are very one-sided the way they've come in the Texas A&M and the Alabama game.
They are, but, you know, being a true Mizzou fan, I blame the refs for A&M, and I blame injuries for Alabama, and, you know, I can sleep easy at night then.
Okay. You know what? Whatever gets you through the night is that's good, and I don't want to mess with that. I don't want to add to your personal anguish. Let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs, because it's just remarkable on an every-week basis They're finding ways to win. Sometimes you look at the box score and you go, well, how did they win that game? And they end up doing it. Sometimes they have problems with the Raiders. They're able to go into Las Vegas and win again. It just, this is the team right now in the NFL that it feels like almost nothing matters. They're just going to win.
It's true. I joked online a few weeks ago that it kind of seems like the worse the Chiefs become, the more like unstoppable they are. And yeah. From a sense that like, it doesn't matter how many problems pop up. It's almost like a whack-a-mole situation, but it's a situation where they're actually whacking the mole. And, you know, it's crazy. I'm in the fantasy football space, and fantasy players, you know, they cannot believe like Patrick Mahomes is no longer, you know, like a weekly 320 yards, three touchdowns. And like that kind of is like tinting like the perception of the Chiefs in the fantasy space, but it's the way this Chiefs team has changed where, you know, that was the baseline for these championships and for like this new dynasty for so long, and how it just kind of shifted almost not overnight, but kind of imperceptibly to being like defense first. And as they're trying to figure out things on offense, you know, trying to work in new guys all the time. You know, some of them are new old friends like Kareem Hunt, Mecole Hardman. They're in this situation where they have to be experimenting on offense, and they can get away with it because of how good the defense is, and because, you know, how like Brady-like Mahomes is, where even if he can't like post the box scores that made him famous right now, he's never going to really make the big mistake. He's always going to make the right decision. And whereas before they were like an explosive offensive team, you know, they're just like a fundamentals and little things team right now. And it's frustrating my fantasy football compatriots, but you know, they look like they are the clear Super Bowl favorite to me. And right now, I would say cruising to a third straight Super Bowl title.
Is it a positive development? Two things: that Travis Kelce had a pretty good performance, a bunch of receptions, 90 yards. So it wasn't long. You know, his long was 25 yards in the game, but he actually caught a bunch of passes, which is something he really hasn't done this year. And then the numbers this week don't really matter, but they're going to continue to integrate DeAndre Hopkins more and more and more. And you got to think that he's got the opportunity to become more impactful as the season goes along. When you look at those two things, should that give Chiefs fans the belief that the offense and that receiving group could be a little bit better than it is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's kind of happened since the Rashee Rice injury is, you know, the Chiefs in some ways have kind of become like, I always compare them to like the Golden State Warriors at their peak, where it's like the regular season, it's important. You can't punt on the regular season. You know, a team that's always just thinking ahead to the playoffs, like understandably so. And I think the plan coming into the season is kind of, you know, not that they were going to like snap count Travis Kelce, but, you know, just not make Travis have to get 10 or 12 targets a game, have him catching 8 to 9 passes a game, just try to keep him a little fresher with the postseason in mind. It's kind of what they did last year. And so again, in the fantasy space, that was really frustrating people because he was catching 2 or 3 passes of a game to begin the year. But I think they had one eye on the postseason. But then when Rashee Rice went out, Rashee Rice had taken like kind of a lot of like that short area work, that work over the middle of the field that is Travis Kelce's bread and butter. And after Rashee Rice got hurt, it was kind of like they flipped the switch. And Travis Kelce is not quite like still like prime era Travis Kelce, but we're seeing box scores, stat lines, like way more similar to his prime. And I think that is kind of what was proven there, that he could have probably been doing this from the beginning of the season. They wanted to try to save him for the postseason. They don't have that luxury right now. And I think Travis Kelce can keep this up. Even if DeAndre Hopkins, who didn't even really run that many routes this week, obviously his usage will ramp up. Maybe he'll take some of the load off Travis Kelce, but I definitely think that the recent improved box scores from Travis Kelce are going to remain a theme going forward.
You've got your Sunday Aftermath column, which is available at NBCSports.com, and you go through a few things. First off, the Browns beat the Ravens, which was completely unexpected. Jameis Winston at quarterback, he played well. I always kind of pump the brakes when these backup quarterbacks come in and have a good first game, because we should learn from Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco and whatever other backup quarterback in the last 5 years who've come in and played well in their first game, and then everything's kind of regressed to the mean afterwards. But is it more about Jameis Winston, or is it more of an indictment on Deshaun Watson that the Browns were able to do what they did against Baltimore?
Well, kind of all of the above, and also honestly an indictment of the Ravens, where it's flying a little bit beneath the radar to like more casual football fans, that the Ravens defense just has not lived up to reputation this year. They're actually allowing the most passing yards in the NFL. they're allowing a ton of fantasy football points to quarterbacks. Where they just are having a really hard time getting things sorted on defense. But, I mean, the statistical comparisons between what Jameis did and what Deshaun Watson was doing, I mean, is not even close. I mean, this is after, too, they traded Amari Cooper 330 yards yesterday. Deshaun Watson had never even been over 200 all year. He threw three touchdowns. Deshaun Watson had five all year. You know, those are just like the raw, like a statistical, like stats, like the more advanced stats, he blew them out of the way, like efficiency metrics, and he had some luck. He had some dropped interceptions, but the quarterback or attempts are kind of a quarterback stat. It just seemed like Deshaun Watson just could not handle like a high volume passing attack anymore, amongst many things he could not handle. And Jameis has always been a guy kind of like Joe Flacco, kind of like a Kirk Cousins, where it doesn't really matter what your style might have been before you played Jameis Winston. He's going to throw the ball a lot. Some weeks it's going to horribly backfire. But whereas before, I mean, the Browns had to, were scratching and clawing for like any production, moving the ball at all. Jameis, you're going to get the interceptions, but he actually goes down the field. He's just going to actually play quarterback. And they're going to have some they're going to have games where the other team doesn't drop three interceptions. The Ravens dropped three interceptions the other day. But whereas it was kind of like abandoned hope, like all you who enter here with Deshaun Watson, the Browns are now going to be at least be in every game they play with their defense and Jameis, you know, just actually running like an actual offense.
The thing that I'm kind of stuck on when it comes to the Browns, and I know Kevin Stefanski handed over play calling duties, but it's still his offense. He's a really good coach and a really good offensive play caller and a good offensive scheme designer, and they just look terrible, and then all of a sudden they look good with Jameis Winston, and I just keep going back to how much Deshaun Watson seemingly took them down.
The Deshaun Watson situation is just one of the craziest in recent NFL history for a lot of reasons, and I think two things happened with Deshaun. You know, the year he was away, things have been changing very quickly in the NFL over the past 5 or 6 years. You know, they're always changing, but we had like the peak of that all-time passing era, the Breeze, Brady, Manning era, where passing offense, explosive offenses just took the day. And I think people kind of took it for granted that that era would just always continue. That was like the NFL as it was now. But I think what we've kind of learned is that actually it was just kind of a special collection of talent. But then defenses finally adjusted. I think Deshaun Watson just missed probably a really pivotal year. Like the year to year, the defenses have just been getting like exponentially more complex. I think that happened to Deshaun Watson. And, you know, he banged his shoulder several times. And to me, he looked like a guy this year kind of trying to like shot put the ball, like the dreaded, like he could, when he did get it down the field, he was just having to heave it, having to put too much into it. And I think he lost more than probably anyone expected in that year away from the field. And then physically, I just think he lost a lot more than expected, the shoulder injuries and just kind of a perfect storm of things not going right for Deshaun Watson and that Browns offense.
Last thing for you, and it was probably the biggest story out of the weekend, but just another loss for the Jets. This team is terrible. They're dysfunctional. They've fired a coach. They've got an offensive coordinator who doesn't seem like he has any clue, an interim head coach who just is in over his head. I mean, this could not be any more of a disaster than it is right now for the Jets.
No, it could not be. And they're out of scapegoats, too. Like, they fired two people. You know, they traded four people. They've already, like, pulled all the fire alarms, basically. And the Jets, if you were being generous, there were some excuses for maybe the slow start. You never expected them to start 2-5, but it was a really, really tough schedule to begin the year, and especially a tough schedule of just really good defenses. But the Patriots yesterday were supposed to be the beginning of the turnaround, of the let-up. And then to lose that game, you know, we're just all the same. Nothing was fixed. Like, this, it's a Hall of Fame quarterback, like an inner ring Hall of Fame quarterback. And the offensive operation is just so sloppy. They burned all three of their timeouts really early in the first half. They burned two early in the second half. You know, you have a guy who's up alongside Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and they're getting pre-snap penalties almost every series. The operation is just terrible. It moves slowly. So, like, they don't – when they're falling behind, they're having trouble keeping up because it's not an up-tempo offense. And just even now, if they finish the year strong, say they go 7-2, they're still at 9-8. They're probably on the outside looking in of the playoffs. And, you know, sometimes I get accused of being hyperbolic, but yesterday just kind of felt like the end of the Aaron Rodgers era, yeah. Unfortunately, where I just don't know how this team can come back from 2-6.
I agree. And look, I lived in Wisconsin for a long time while he was a Packer, and he offended a lot of people in the way he went about things, but he always followed it up with victories. Now he's the same guy, but he's losing, and it just feels like the world is rooting against him. And I have to wonder, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, is this going to be something that impacts his legacy, or are we just going to think back on the Green Bay years? Because there are so many people that are really taking joy in Aaron Rodgers not having much success.
I will say that, you know, these bitter ends tend to fade. So I guess he has that working in his favor. And so you're going to see, just a guy who's not to like, go psychoanalyst here, but not playing with a lot of joy.
No.
Sound dumb. I don't think I've seen Aaron Rodgers smile this season, and it kind of understandably so. But I don't think it's a legacy tarnisher necessarily. You know, it depends on what he keeps doing off the field, of course. But, I mean, I think kind of like Favre with the Packers, it's almost like a rite of passage for a lot of these guys. You go finish your career, usually it's dismal. I don't think this is going to affect his legacy for what he did with the Packers. I don't know. He's the kind of guy he could go do something totally crazy. He could have a disappointing season, then go do something totally crazy. So I guess the ball is in his court on that one.
Patrick, if people want to read your stuff, they can do so at NBCSports.com. Just give a plug on how to find it. And like you said, you're a lot in the fantasy space, so people play fantasy football, definitely be interested in the content that you're putting out.
Yeah, RotoPat, R-O-T-O-Pat on Twitter. NBCSports, RotoWorld.com in particular. I podcast several times a week, the RotoWorld Football Show. So yeah, check it out, especially if you want to read about fantasy football.
Are you based in St. Louis?
I am. So that's what I can never say no. America's Sports Voice came away.
Oh, baby.
Really special to come on. So, yeah, I am a St. Louisan. It's tough during the season to fit things in. I would never say no to KMOX. Lifelong listener. Truly a privilege to come on.
Awesome. Well, we'll get you on again. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Matt.
All right, very good. That's Patrick Dorge joining us here on the program, and we appreciate him taking a few moments. I did not realize he was a St. Louis guy until I looked at the Twitter bio. Nice job by Kyle Sixta of booking him, and now we know that we could call him up whenever, and he's just going to say yes, because that is the power of KMOX. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up hour number one of the program. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Just a couple minutes left in hour number one. Hour number two, we've got no guests lined up. So if you, we'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some Cardinals during the hour. So if you want to get in here talking Cardinals, we'll have that opportunity for you in the 7 o'clock hour. A couple things I want to touch on. First off, I discussed this last week a little bit. I think it was on Friday, about how I think the Cardinals can be similar this upcoming season to what they were this past season, and that means being a playoff contending team. That's probably their ceiling if the things that we expect to happen this offseason do end up happening, that they are a playoff contender kind of on the low end. But under the pretense of it being kind of a rebuild year, as opposed to this year where the pretense was that they were a legitimate competitor, does it feel different if that's what they turn into? So I want to get into that. I'll look forward to hearing your comments on that. Also, Bernie Miklas, KMOX's own, had a really interesting YouTube video today. You should be subscribed to his YouTube at The Bernie Show on YouTube. And he talked about Oliver Marmol continuing to be surrounded by people who could potentially take his job. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit coming up in just a while. Speaking of Bernie, a reminder, coming up in a little bit more than an hour, 8 o'clock tonight, we've got another KMOX Sports Roundtable. We record these via video streams on at noon, where myself, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas are with you. And you can watch them on any of our social media channels, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Starting next week, we're going to be doing this every day. So your noon hour, if you want sports talk, you're going to hear from us every day at noon. We'll talk more about that coming up later here on KMOX.